All right, Kiss Army, welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Thank you for giving us your time today and letting us into your head. I hope we don't do any damage. This is a Kiss-related podcast by the board for the board. We hope that you enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to the Kiss FAQ podcast. Today is the third installment of the Riff episodes. So with me, I have my good friend Mark. Hello, Mark.
Greetings, Daniel. How are you doing today?
Just fine. And yourself?
Pretty good. Enjoying this Easter Sunday. It's nice here. It's, plus 12 Celsius here today. We have no snow anymore, and there's lots of birds, and things are starting to grow. And I unfortunately heard that you got a little bit of snow on your way.
Yeah, last few days we landed 25 centimeters of fresh new snow.
Wow.
We got some, the first starlings arrived today here, so that's
nice.
At least something. But soon enough, it'll go.
Yes.
It'll go away. Yep.
Yeah.
So today we're focusing on our favorite opening riffs. So the start of a song often starts with a cool riff in Kiss songs. We picked five each. I picked all the way back to Love Gun up to Carnival of Souls. So it's a nice mix. How about you? Did you pick mostly from the 70s or what happened?
Actually, it's funny. With mine, I only have one 70s pick, and that's something from Dressed to Kill. But other than that, I have a selection of early 80s, okay, and a couple of 90s things. And one mid-90s, so it's a mixed bag for me.
Oh, cool. Let's get things started with my first riff. And this one goes way back to 77.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Gene riff, and it goes something like this.
Nice.
Yeah, that's Almost Human from 77. It reminds me a little bit of another Gene song that I really appreciate from the early years. This one. I think it's he goes down at the end. Same way he does in Almost Human.
Pretty
similar licks, and I enjoy both.
Yeah, Gene is known for those kind of descending sort of riffs that he likes to do. But that's definitely one of the more stronger identifiable riffs. I mean, as soon as you started playing that, you can right away hear the bongo drums and all those other things there. It's such a great riff.
It's a great riff, but this part I don't feel is as good. It's a bit weaker part. So watching you is way cooler all through the song, I think. The different licks in watching you are up to par every lick. But watching you... Almost Human. Yeah. Has a few problems, I think. It's not one of my favorite songs, but for sure one of my favorite opening riffs.
Yeah, for sure. Now, before we go on, I think it might be interesting to talk about one thing before we continue. And we never did this the last time, so we should maybe do it this time. Is the guitars that we're playing, Daniel, the guitar that you're playing today, what guitar is that you have there?
Well, this is my first guitar that I ever got when I was 15. And I actually bought it because I saw a bootleg video from 92 in Cardiff when Kiss played a really short European tour. Mm-hmm. They toured the UK, and the rest of Europe weren't after the Crazy Nights tour, they weren't a big draw over here.
So
no one wanted to you know, risk their money. So actually the tour started and ended in the UK. I think they had planned to go to Sweden and Scandinavia and all of that, and Spain and so on, but it never happened. But that short tour, I got a bootleg from Cardiff, which is, I think it's the capital of Wales or something. Mm-hmm. And Bruce played something that looked like this.
Yeah, it's a junior.
That's why I bought it, actually. I saw that bootleg video and I thought, what a cool guitar Bruce Kulick has. But this is actually, I think it's some sort of Epiphone. It wasn't the most expensive one, but it's been doing well. It has worked well for, well, over 20 years for me now. So
yeah,
it's a pretty cool guitar.
It's great, because when I was looking at it, and I thought right away of that it's like a Les Paul Junior model. That's the sort of shape and the construction of it, and it's an Epiphone. But Epiphone is related now strongly with Gibson, right? So it's in the same family as that, anyways. Now, so those things are nicely made.
It says Gibson Epiphone on the model. Yeah, special model. Well,
yeah,
it's pretty good. Yeah. What about you?
And I'm using my Les Paul. This is my it's the studio, Les Paul Studio. Right. I got this in 2014, I think it is. It's the one they came out with the 120th anniversary models of this. So I got this one, and I got an SG also from that same year, right? But I like these ones. I like the studios because they're like Les Paul customs, but not as fancy. They don't have any of the binding, and they don't have any of the, you know, it's a lot more fancy schmancy. Some of them have three pickups and stuff like that, but this is a little bit more workhorse-ish, but it has the same pickups as it has the 496 and the 498s in there. So they sound really good. And I love this guitar. This is my main guitar. I mean, for the last little while, I mean, a lot of my albums were recorded on this guitar. So I just thought it might be interesting to mention it, because I don't think we've ever mentioned our guitars before when we played these. Okay, so I will go now to my first riff. And this one, you might remember when we did an episode of the Kiss FAQ podcast, we were talking about songs recently. And this one came up as a song that I was never really at first very... it's not that I didn't like the song, but it was never one of my favorites. But after I watched a video with this recently, I really love this song now. When Chris Jericho and his band, I keep forgetting the name of that band.
Quarantine. Yeah.
They did Heart of Chrome, right? And that's the song that I wanted to do today. So cool. It's just... So I've always loved that riff, right? Mm-hmm. Because what's great about it is that little simple riff that it's played at the same time as the. So you have that kind of counter melody happening back and forth under it. I mean, it's really great. And even the verse, if I can remember it, I think it's something simple like. It's like a really cool riff at the top there. And then it goes to the... So it's a cool little like three-part song, right? Really, where you have the intro verse, the verse, and then a little pre-chorus part. But that intro part has always been very cool. I've always liked that. And I remember the very first time I heard that song, I was like, sounds familiar, because it almost has the same riff as Tough Love. That da 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 da. So it's similar, but it's not the same thing. But I've really come to love that. That whole riff in A, you can tell that's Paul Stanley. That part here. That's total Paul Stanley, that.
Yeah, that's a song that's been one of many people's favorites, I think, when it comes to Paul Stanley's songs on Revenge. It's often mentioned as one of their favorites when you listen to podcasts all over the place. I know, I think Lonnie likes that one, and maybe Julian as well. Sort of a heavy Paul Stanley song, which kind of works on that album.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Before we continue with riff number two, I just want to see a little bit of Gene Simmons playing Almost Human. Let's have a look at it.
The next one on here is a song that I wrote when I saw a werewolf movie.
Oh, no.
But it kind of turned the lyrics when it's like what happens when guys change. But it happened to me when I didn't grow hair, I got a chubby. Things started to grow. It's kind of like a werewolf, but not.
TMI.
Almost Human.
Yeah, that's, of course, the Gene Simmons Band on tour in 2017-18. He's going back this summer on tour. I actually bought a ticket the other week. I'm hopefully going to see him in Gothenburg this summer once again. I really enjoyed his show in Sweden last time around. I played a lot of deep cuts with cool guitar riffs like Charisma and Fits Like a Glove and so on. So I'm hoping to go and see him this summer.
That's going to be great. I mean...
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
No, it's a bit to travel, but I think I'll manage. I'm on a long vacation as we have over here in Europe, so I have to come up with something to do.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, the great thing about that is it proves one thing. Gene isn't so much sick of touring. I think he's just sick of touring with the costumes on and all that stuff. I mean, obviously, when you don't have to wear a 50-pound costume, it's a bit more fun to go on stage and play music.
True that, yeah. My next pick is from Ace Frehley's solo album in 78. And it starts off in a real cool way with one of his signature licks that he often uses in when he solos. So I'll try to play it for you. It goes something like this. Yeah, that's the one. Speeding back to my baby.
Yeah.
And I don't mean maybe. I think it's such a cool song all over the place, you know, from the start off to all the licks in that song. What an Ace Frehley song. He managed to put on quite some great songs on this album. Everything from Rip It Out to Speeding Back to My Baby to some cool songs like Snowblind and stuff like that. Some of the licks are, of course, similar to other stuff Ace has done previously. I think the feel of the chorus riff, this one, it's kind of reminiscent to the main riff in Shock Me.
Yeah.
There's something there that's very similar in the feel of those two riffs. And then there's a part, you know, that almost sounds like the part they play in Shock Me when Ace is doing his solo. Quite similar as well. So Ace likes to use the same riff or variants of the same riff over and over again. But there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's a great riff. But it really kicks you in the ass at start of the song. I think it's a real cool start of a song. So my second pick is Ace Frehley, Speeding Back to My Baby. Such a cool song.
Yes, absolutely. So my second pick comes from a record that is either really loved by Kiss fans or really despised by Kiss fans. But while I find this record not to be the greatest one, this song is definitely one of the standout songs on the album. And the album is, of course, The Elder. And this is the song that I picked here. Now, let's see if I can get this right here. And so on and so on, right? But that opening riff, I've always remembered when I first heard that, I was like, wow, this is such a great album. And the funny thing is, I know a lot of people, when they got The Elder, they got the version that starts with the Oath on it, like the US version. But the first time I got it on vinyl, I luckily got the one that had the original version with fanfare and Just a Boy and all that. So I never got to that song the first time until much later in the record. So when that came up later, I was like, wow, this is really good. Why didn't they, you know, use this earlier? And then later on, I found out that they had an actual US version that had that, which is ironic because people were always surprised that I never got that version of it first. So, but it's such a great song. I mean, again, what a great Paul Stanley riff. That again, one thing that stands out with Paul's playing is he likes this kind of stuff. Like that. You'll hear that a lot on his stuff.
Under the Gun.
Yeah, he likes those little hammer-on pull-off riffs, right, on there. And you'll hear another one in another selection that I do that's similar to that idea with it. So, but yeah, the Oath is, I think, one of the strong songs on the album. That and I are definitely one of those big anthemic songs on there. And I definitely thought, you know, it was going to be between I and this one, but I like this one a bit better than I. So I decided to pick this one. What's your thoughts on The Oath?
Well, as an album, The Elder doesn't work for me. But this song alone, I think, is a great song. And I remember when they played it on some of the cruises, on the Kiss cruises, people went nuts listening to it. And live, hearing all the doubled, you know, bass drum and everything sounds real cool. On the album, the drums are a bit, you know, distant, I think, in the mix, at least when I've listened to it. But live, it sounds like a real killer and one of the best songs for sure on that album. And unfortunately, the album is very strange in my mind. Some of the stuff like Fanfare and even Mr. Blackwell and stuff like that, I never go back and listen to, unless we have to due to doing a podcast episode.
Yeah,
and you have to go back and listen to it. But it's an interesting album, I'll give you that. It's an interesting album, and some people really love that album. It's stands out, that's for sure. Before we continue with the next riff, I'm going to show some of the comments we've received from previous Riff F episodes.
Sure.
And like Austin Newland, he says, "This was fantastic. Please do another one." Robert Weedman, "Great job. Very cool topic. Fun seeing you two guys playing guitar." Eddie Pavlor, "Awesome episode. Please do more." So initially we just started this because we like playing the guitar and talking Kiss, but it seems like people enjoy us doing it, so that's why we continue to do these episodes. And today it's the opening riff, and my third opening riff is actually from, I think this must be, is it the album After the Elder? Yes, it is. It's Kiss Killers.
Mm.
Four new studio tracks and a lot of Kiss hits on this album. I recall getting this in the mid-80s on cassette and immediately liked this one and a few other of the new songs as well. This one, unfortunately, they didn't do it a lot live. Paul has tried it on some of the cruises acoustically, but it was really too late. His voice was pretty shot when he tried it, but nice song, beautiful song. It goes like this. To Run from Kiss Killers. What an awesome song. And let's have a quick look how it was when Paul tried this in, I think it was somewhere around 2015 or 16.
All right.
On some sort of, you know, meet and greet or some acoustic set that Kiss did for the fans. And see the reaction that Gene has when Paul is trying to sing this one. This was pretty cool back then. Gene telling Paul to please don't sing this. Let's have a look at it. So Gene tells Paul, save your voice. And that was probably good advice at this point of time. But there's another video from one of the cruises, and it doesn't really sound that awful. It's pretty cool when Paul does it, and he lets the audience sing the chorus and so on. But pretty cool song. What do you have to say about Nowhere to Run? Do you like it?
Oh, I've always loved that song. I mean, I think it's my favorite song from that four songs that they did for the Killers album. But I think all four of those songs are pretty standout. I mean, I've said it before, considering how quickly they had to do this stuff and record it, I think they turned out to be really good songs. I mean, it's a shame that maybe one or two of them couldn't have just been sneaked onto, you know, Creatures of the Night. I mean, they were really good songs. So I really enjoyed that one. And it is up in the high stratosphere for his singing. Yeah. So he can't exactly go back. And that's one thing I wish singers would think about is when you're doing songs now, sure, when you're 25, 30 years old, you know, you can sing probably the highest notes you can sing or you can do whatever. But remember, if you plan on doing this long-term in a career, then, you know, it might be better to think of some, you know, melodies that you can sing even when you're older, because man, it's nothing worse than not being able to sing something that you wrote.
Yeah, that's true. Before we hear your next song, your next pick, let's have a look what what the listeners have said about previous episodes. Thank you, Blue Racer. You wrote that great show, guys. Loved it. And Sylvie Rose, she's been following the podcast for quite some time. I think I've seen her commented quite a lot, so we appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Loved the episode. Fits like a glove. Wow. It's cool to focus on the riffs. Looking forward to the next one. So people seem to enjoy these riff episodes. And let's see now what Mark has picked for his next riff.
All right. So this comes from an album that I love. And I've always loved this record, even though the funny thing is it was a return to form for Kiss, but never sold that good, which is Creatures of the Night. Now, yeah. Paul Stanley had some fantastic songs on this album. And one of them, when we were talking about, you know, best intro riffs, this one immediately came to my head because it's such a simple riff, but I always thought that it was a pretty cool riff. Now, let's see if I can play this one correctly. Sometimes I get mixed up here. I have my little notes here just to remember what to play here and there. But let's give it a shot so I can remember here. Oops. So there you go. I've always thought that riff is pretty cool. And again, it shows Paul with that hammer-on pull-off thing that he likes to do all the time. And again, this is such a great song. It has a good drum feel, too. I mean, the great drum feel at the beginning. And yeah, I'm not sure if this is one of the ones that he did with the guy who helped him write Creatures of the Night. I think it might have been this one, or there was another one that he wrote with him, but great stuff. I mean, I've always thought that it's a strong melody, some good singing, again, some high singing again by Mr. Stanley on this one as well, but a great riff. And again, it's not very complicated, but that's what makes it so catchy.
I rediscovered this tune when they performed it on a cruise in 1718, somewhere around there. They brought back this song. It was a big surprise that they played this one. It sounded pretty good live, and it's a cool Paul Stanley song from an album filled with cool Paul Stanley songs. Creatures of the Night. So we heard a song from The Elder that was great, The Oath, one from Killers, and now we move on to Creatures of the Night. There's a lot of good stuff in these years, even though some of the albums aren't up to par like The Elder, I think. Creatures of the Night is such a strong album all over. Unfortunately, it didn't sell, and well, we all know that story. But so they've played quite a few of these songs from that album live, War Machine, Creatures of the Night, and so on. So, cool album, cool pick. That was actually on my shortlist as well, just because it's a bit odd, I think. It's a bit different than many other opening riffs on Kiss albums. So it's a cool one. Okay, let's see what's next. For me, Dressed to Kill was always a favorite album.
Yeah. Yes.
Very simple guitars on it, so it was easy to learn them pretty early on. And I think some of the songs haven't been getting the love that they actually deserve, because you could play almost any song from this album live and it would be real cool. And this is one they actually played live when I saw them back in 97 in Stockholm. They played two nights at Stockholm Stadium. It was the reunion era. 35,000 each night. It was pretty cool. Wow. Everywhere you could see Kiss fans in makeup in the city and so on for a cool weekend there. And the only thing they changed from night one to night two was this. They added this one. Yeah, such a cool song, and everything is done with power chords. Really easy song if you want to start out playing guitar, but still sounds real heavy and real cool. And you know that little thing that Ace does in the beginning of on the intro riff, I think is cool and fits like a glove, you know. So oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite off that album. There are plenty more. Another one I like is, you know, if you remember this one. Love All I Can and Room mm-hmm. Service and a lot of great Paul stuff on that album. What do you say about that song?
Yeah, I really love that song too. I mean, I think that whole record is really well done. I mean, compared to their first two records, it sounds really good. The playing on it is really energetic and upbeat. And, you know, I think that Neil Bogart did a good job in capturing the essence of the songs he did. I always found that he kept the songs a little bit shorter. He didn't let them go too deep with too many extra parts and stuff like that. I mean, for the exception of maybe She, but you know, he made sure that it was a strong verse, strong chorus, in and out. You know, the record's only like 32 minutes long, I think, or 31 minutes long. It's not a very long record at all. So, but the point is they're really strong songs, and they're songs that we all seem to remember. So that's the sign of a very good song, right?
Yep. So let's hear what you've picked, Mark.
All right. So I decided to pick something from a bit later period. Now, this is not, you know, when people say later, people start thinking like, you know, like, you know, like the Revenge era or something like that. But I picked something a little bit later on. I wanted to pick something from a record that we talked about recently, but we had kind of mixed reviews on it. And the song is this here. Now, what's cool is they go into that little breakdown part, but he does that.
Yeah.
I always thought that was such a good thing to add to it. You know, it kind of brought everything down. And, you know, when they do those big shots and... he does that big singing part in there. It's good dynamics in that song. And you can definitely tell that he was trying to do Detroit Rock City Part 2 or, you know, something very exciting like he tended to do in the old days, like, you know, like I Stole Your Love or something like that, where it's a very big introductory song. And I know that, you know, my good friend Bob Ezrin had involvement in this song as well. So It's funny because so far of the stuff that I've been playing, you know, Heart of Chrome, The Oath, Psycho Circus, they're all Bob Ezrin involved songs. You know, you would think that's a bit odd coming from me, but like I said before, I don't really hate Bob as a person or whatever, but I mean, sometimes his touch with some Kiss songs are not to my liking, but these songs I think are pretty good. Like, I mean, guitar wise, they definitely stand out. And I think that they are pretty memorable. I mean, I think Psycho Circus, in my opinion, I don't know about you, Daniel, but I think Psycho Circus is the best song on that album.
I recall hearing the first single, which was Psycho Circus, and being really exciting about the new album because I thought that song had everything I wanted. As you said, it reminded me of earlier stuff like Detroit Rock City and stuff like that. The video was a great hit over here. They played it everywhere. And the album was actually the first album in Sweden from Kiss to hit number one. Psycho Right. Circus is the first album that reached number one in Sweden. So, but it was at the back end of the reunion tour, of course, where they got a lot of attention here and became real popular once again. But that song is real special, and Paul thinks it's special as well because they've played it ever since in the live set. One of the few newer songs that survived in the live set. There's nothing from Revenge, there's nothing from Carnival of Souls, and so yeah. on. But this one song or two from Sonic Boom, and that's it. So it's a real cool song, and it was a good pick from you. Psycho yeah. Circus. Let's go back to some comments from the viewers. Eric Nelson, killer stuff. Keep doing these jams. I love it. Atomic, you two breathe new life to the songs with bringing out the guitar details. Well, yeah. I think that's when you just hear the guitars or you see people enjoying a song a whole lot, it can actually make you go back and listen to the song with a different, you know, with different ears, so to speak. You hear yeah. something you didn't notice before. So I think it's pretty cool to do these episodes and that people are paying attention and enjoying them.
Yeah.
Okay, not too many left now. Is it the last one? Yes, it is.
Yes.
Let's see, what did I pick? Yeah, I picked a song from Carnival of Souls, and they have a totally different guitar tone on that album. Let's see if I can do something that sounds pretty similar, at least. Something like this. Let's actually take a look in the mirror from
yeah.
from Carnival Souls. I think it's the final song, no, the second to last song or something like that, buried at the back end of the record. I always liked that one because there were a lot of similarities to one of my favorite songs off of Dress to Kill. I think the main riff, the kind of remind me of a riff from Dress to Kill, this one. Let's see. It's the same phrasing, sort of. I think that's why I like it. And there are other parts that are pretty similar as well. You know, in Lover All I Can, there's like a breakdown where you have some meanie, small a drum solo in the song. And the same goes for this song. You have, I think it's in the bridge. And then they move on into Bruce K. Kulik's cool solo. So there's a lot of similarities between this song and the way they sounded on Dress to Kill. It sounds fun. It's an upbeat song, simple, cool, like I enjoy Kiss being. Not too complex, like trying to do go way overboard, like Bob Ezrin has done at times with the songs on The Elder and so on. But this is just keeping it simple, cool riff, cool drums, and great vocals from Paul. Maybe the lyrics could have been written a bit different, but as a whole, I really enjoy this song, and I think it's buried on the second side of Carnival of Souls, and not too many people know about it. Of course, the diehards know every song, but most people have no clue that there's a great song on at the end of Carnival of Souls. So go and listen to that one. By the way, let's see how it sounds live, because Bruce, he went out with his band, the Bruce Kulik Band, and did a few shows, and they actually played this one, at least a part of it. Let's have a look here. That's Bruce Kulik's band playing Carnival of Souls stuff. I just wish Bruce can do something now when he's out of Grand Funk. What do you think he will be up to, Mark? Do you think he will release a solo and join another band?
I don't know. I think that he's going to do a lot of different things now, because I think once he was with Grand Funk, they did a lot of playing Grand Funk. I mean, they're a band that's pretty active still, considering they're right past their prime now. But, you know, they did a lot of weekend shows. They did a lot of little tours and stuff like that. But I think now Bruce is going to focus on, you know, a lot of meet and greets. I think he's doing one now, like one of these comic book convention things. I think they announced that he's going to be appearing at one. So I think he's going to be doing some of those, where he's going to go do some signings and stuff like that. But I definitely think he's going to start playing live again with his own band and playing some of this Kiss stuff. And I have a feeling that he'll probably want to do some sort of a recording again, like his own another solo record, and maybe even do a live record that can incorporate some of this Kiss stuff, you know, because like you said before, he's the ambassador of this time period. Nobody else really plays it. So I think Gene and Paul at this point probably don't care and probably wouldn't mind if he was the one to kind of go out there and play it, you know?
Yeah, hopefully. And he also mentioned he's writing his book, but I don't have my hopes up for that one. He's such a team guy, so it probably might be a bit boring. But you'll never know. He might put some interesting stuff in there that we didn't know from before. Okay, another comment. Gary M., this was fantastic, gents. You both always do a great job on the regular FAQ podcast, so it was definitely cool to watch and listen to this little spin-off episode. Yeah. Talking about spin-off episodes, I recall when we did those Kiss quizzes, like that was also sort of a spin-off episode.
Yes.
I don't know if people remember those, but here's a shout-out to the Kiss quizzes. Go back and watch some of them. I think they're pretty cool if you have some time over that and you want to have something fun to watch. Yeah, those were some pretty cool spin-off episodes. I remember putting geography as one category And Americans are notoriously famous for being lousy in geography. And it's it was actually true, because you cleaned the out the house completely. You took those categories, and you're from Canada. So apparently Canada focus a bit more on geography than America.
I love a geography. In high school, I always loved that topic. And being a musician who liked to tour and go to new places, I loved looking at maps and seeing things and always kind of dreaming about, you know, doing a tour and saying, maybe you go here, let's go to Chicago and then over here. So I kind of knew a lot of the places and the geography of the landscape a bit better than most people, I would think.
Yeah, and aren't your mother and father from a different country, or is it your grandfather or grandmother? Or
my mom and dad are, well, my mom and dad are both from Czechoslovakia when it was that country. And my mom is technically German. She was adopted. She was a war baby from World War II. So she was technically East German at the time, but she got adopted by a Czechoslovakian lady, a nurse. So she got raised there. So yeah, I mean, I have European, family and blood in my system.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's listen to the final pick from Mark. What did you pick?
Okay. So this is going to be funny, because so far through the whole thing, we were playing songs that none of us picked the same. And while you didn't pick this song, but it's funny because you were playing little parts from it already. So this is going to be from Drastic Hill. And I've always loved this song too. And obviously you love it just as much as I do. So let's see if I can do it justice here. Oh, sorry. Oops. Oops. Jesus, that riff, I always have a hard time with that riff. There you go. I got it right at the end there, but it's a great riff, and it's a bit tricky there when you don't play it often, to just kind of play it off the cuff there. But yeah, it's a great riff. Definitely has a lot of pop elements in there. And what I always found that was interesting about that was that verse part, because you know he does the D, C, and you would have thought that he would do E, but no, he goes, which is E flat, right? Which is not a typical chord to put in there. But then, of course, he follows it up with B flat. So then that kind of makes sense when you have the double flats there in the verse part. So it's very, very interesting how they kind of threw in this sort of odd chord phrasings in there. They're not necessarily odd in like chord structure. Like it's not playing like a, you know, E7 chord, like nothing like that, but it's just the different sort of notation in there, going from E, a D, C to E flat, is not very common in that sort of structure. But I've always loved that song. And that intro part is actually very cool too, that whole. It's very Chuck Berry almost, that whole part there. So I've always loved that part as well. And it's definitely one of those songs too, where you mentioned before how the look in the mirror was kind of buried at the back of the record. And so was this song, unfortunately. Yeah. But the only difference is it only took you like 20 minutes to get to this song, where it took you probably like an hour to get to the other one there from Carnival.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an awesome song. Wasn't that one on Wicked Lester, on the Wicked Lester sessions? Yeah.
Yes, it was.
I think
yeah.
it sounded pretty cool even back then. It wasn't like She, where they used flutes and all kind of crap.
Yeah.
I think the early version of that one is, you have to go and listen to that on YouTube if you haven't, listeners out there. There's a cool version from Wicked Lester of that song. So that's the songs for today, the riffs for today. Today's news from the Kiss FAQ podcast. Did you see the numbers that Julian posted of how many listens and views we've had?
No.
Thus far this year. Well, let's take a look at it and let's hear what you have to say about it. This just landed today. The top five episodes so far this year. A Year in Review in fifth place. Number four, Refocused at 50. Number three, Kiss versus 70s. Number two, the predictions for 2024. And the leading episode right now is the review of 10,000 Volts. So far, it has gotten well over 6,000 listens. So, what do you have to say about these five episodes? Any surprises or anyone that you enjoyed particularly?
I thought the 10,000 Volts review was good because, I mean, I've enjoyed that record, and hearing everybody's opinion on it is always interesting. I always like hearing what people think about it to see if we think similarly or if we think worlds apart on it, you know. And it seems like we were pretty much, you know, along the same lines on most of it. The Year in Review, I always think that those episodes do fairly well. Even on my own channel, when I do my whole sort of, you know, recap of the year of my favorite records of that year, that's always the episode that seems to do very well on my channel as well. And obviously it does well on the Kiss FAQ as well. The Refocused at 50, I think that's not a surprise either. The 50th anniversary is a big thing for Kiss, and it is amongst the Kiss fans as well, obviously. So whenever you talk about, you know, the sort of historical significance of stuff, people want to listen to it. And then, you know, Kiss versus the 70s, you know, of course, that's going to be a topic of interest for people, too. I mean, considering that the 70s was the big era for Kiss in general, right? So, and then the 2024 predictions, those are always interesting, those episodes, because when you take a look at them and review them a year later and see how close you were, it's interesting to see how close you were or how off you were on some of these predictions.
Yeah, I especially enjoyed these versus episodes. We haven't done them for a long amount of time. We just started with them. Thus, you have to listen to a few other records. And it's kind of fun when Julian or Ken picks an album that I haven't really listened to and I can discover some tunes that I actually missed and find some gems that I enjoy. And at times it feels like homework, you know, listening to an awful album from start to end. Well, you can cheat a little bit, you can skip forward at times, but I think that was a great new idea that we have incorporated in the show. So
yeah.
And the other ones, I have to agree with what you said. Of course, 10,000 Volts is the big news this year. So, of course, it will get a lot of traction. We'll see what happens in the Kiss world. Nothing has really happened. Nothing big from the Kiss office so far. We'll see if they release something cool in the future, and then we'll have to talk about that.
But there is one thing I wanted to talk to you about really quickly.
Yeah.
And that is, there's a news item that came out. I don't know if you saw this. I'm going to take this off for a second so we can get big here for a second. One bit of news clip here that came up that I thought was very interesting and sort of has to do with Ace Frehley in a sense, and I'll explain here. Are you familiar with the artist Billie Eilish?
Yeah.
Okay, so she did an interview with Rolling Stone magazine recently where she was calling out or sort of complaining about musicians that do multiple variants of their albums just to boost their record sales. She says that this is a cheap way of making big record sales for artists. And she kind of offhandedly, she didn't mention Ace by name, I don't think, but people put a picture of Ace Frehley when she talked about that, because, you know, whenever he puts out a record, he has like 17 different colored variants. And she said that that's a way to make your records get more record sales when they really shouldn't. You know, she said, if you were to just release it with one color, then you would really know how big the records sell. But because people buy multiple colors of these things, you're jacking up your sales by doing that. I thought it was interesting theory about that because, you know, while lots of artists do that as well. I mean, I know everybody from Taylor Swift to Ace Frehley to other artists do records where they do, you know, a black release and then a color one. Like Judas Priest even did like a red one and another color one, like a splatter and then a black. But that's only three variants. Ace Frehley is known to go way overboard on this, like 10 different colors. Even the reissues of the Frehley's Comet, apparently are going to be like 7-8 different colors of it. So I can kind of see where she's making a point saying that this is just kind of bullshit, saying that this record sold good if they're counting all these different variations of the things as part of the sales, right? What do you think?
I'm not really into the vinyl thing. I think it's crazy to buy two vinyls of the same record. You know, one is enough. I'm more for the sonics. You know, if I hear an album I like, I buy it, but I don't need multiple versions of it or multiple
colors, you know,
and colors and different covers and stuff. Yeah, like I'm more into the music, and these days I don't buy a lot of records. I listen through other channels, so to speak. Yeah,
yeah.
Unfortunately, I still enjoy looking at an album and, you know, the feel of it and everything. But I'm not really buying those vinyls that Kiss and Ace release these days because I've heard all the music already. So there's really no idea. Actually, just a few days, we reviewed an old album on a different episode. Have you listened to Vinnie Vincent's first album lately?
Not lately, but I do have it on vinyl. Yeah, I remember listening to it. I remember it being very... not hard to listen, but it was a little over the top in spots.
Hell yeah. It would be interesting to hear your take on that as a guitarist. You know, for me, Vinnie Vincent, his playing on that record is one of the weak points. You know, you just want to switch Vinnie with someone else, another lead guitarist. He destroys the complete album. There are some good stuff in there, but every solo is unbearable.
Yeah,
it's mind-boggling to think that guy who created such great solos did this album and completely destroys every song with his noodling.
Well, that solidifies the point that we were talking about before, and I think you even mentioned it before in an old episode where they said that you agreed that Vinnie Vincent is a great player when he has a producer working with him. Somebody who can say, no, that's, you're going too nuts there. Just do something like this or do something like that. And, you know, Vinny was always the one who was saying before that, oh, when I was in Kiss, I was only doing 20% of what I can do. But the 20% was good. You know, I mean, the solos were great when he did that. If he was to do all that sort of, you know, angry bee in a jar playing, like that whole kind of... Like all that stuff. I mean, it gets nuts after a while. And maybe one song would be okay to do that, but nine songs, and you know, it's just crazy. I mean, and at sometimes it even sounds like he's not even in the right key. He goes so quick through it, you know. He was just trying to prove a point. I think that was the problem then, is that he was trying to show Ace and Gene that, or sorry, Paul and Gene that, you know, you were holding me back. Look what I can do. And I think that when there was just singing, and the choruses and the verse and choruses going, the songs are pretty good. They sounded pretty good. But as soon as he started doing the guitar solo, it just kind of completely blew the thing out of the water, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't fun listening to the complete album, I can tell you that. And next time we'll listen to his second solo album. I don't remember how that sounded, but we'll see. Okay, the final thing we'll do today is to pick a few songs that we think can help the Kiss fans out there to start playing guitar. You know, there's a lot of Kiss fans that they can't play the guitar. That my first thing when I heard Kiss was that I wanted to pick up the guitar and started playing some stuff. Oh no, my battery is getting low. I have to put in a chord. Let's see here if I have one here. Yeah, so for example, we all know Julian plays the guitar and Lonnie. But at times I come across people who are big, huge Kiss fans, But they don't play the guitar, and I say, why? There are a lot of easy songs that you can play. So if you just can think of, let's say, three songs that they could start off their guitar career with. My first pick would be this one from Creatures of the Night. This one. You know, War Machine.
Yeah.
You can play, it sounds pretty cool just by playing it on a single string, on the E string. So
yeah.
War Machine is a good way to start off playing guitar. It was one of my first songs. And the next one I wanted to play was, when I started playing, was Parasite by Ace Frehley. Mm. It's also the E string. It goes like... pretty easy. And then just power chords. Real cool song, real cool riffs, but very easy if you want to start playing the guitar. And my final pick would be something like, maybe She that we talked about. Power chords. And then some easy guitar. And there's loads of stuff in She that can enhance your guitar playing a little bit. Things like this. Stuff to start learning the guitar. Good stuff to start off learning the guitar. I think it's a slow song as well, so you don't have to rush it. You know, pretty slow.
Yeah.
So those are my three picks. If you're a Kiss fan and you want to start playing guitar, go check out War Machine, She, and Parasite. Good stuff, easy to play, and you will discover how fun it is to play the guitar. I mean, I do it every day because it's just so fun and relaxing. It's like reading a book or watching a movie for me.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Mark, you didn't have a lot of time to think about this, but I'm sure you can grab three songs from when you started playing guitar, three songs you started off playing.
Well, right away, if you want to get somebody to play guitar, you want to make it easy for them to start, like you said. So, you know, War Machine was a great example. It's a one string thing you can do, and it's easy. Another great example of it is just to take something that's really simple rhythmically or easily chord wise, like Lick It Up. Like, you can go like, and you're just playing the open A, right?
Yep.
G, eh? So that's a really simple one there. I mean, you got like four chords there, and really, as long as you can just play, which is just open A, open fifth string. I mean, you got most of it right there. That's the whole root of the whole song, is just that rhythm, right? Another good one that's pretty simple to do too is, and again, it's in the recording of A, is Cold Gin, right? Right? And it's so simple, right? And the verse is just... So it's really not a difficult song to do when you think about it that way. I mean, the thing about learning or teaching people to play guitar is that if they don't stumble upon it or see a result, they get frustrated easy and they give up on it. So those are the kind of things there when you have something so simple, like, or it's just simple chording. And the most important thing is that it's the same chord, right? And you're just moving it from spot to spot. Now, but you got to be careful with this one, is that it's not the same chord. You have to put your finger one fret lower to get that sound, right? out of that. So it's you know, those are two easy examples of it. I mean, the only other song that I can maybe think of, but it's not too easy, but it's not that hard, is like, let's say, Detroit Rock City, right? A, B, and then the same thing. Right? So, I mean, one thing I would highly recommend, and I think that this is important too, is there's a really good site on YouTube called Dad Rock. Okay? And this guy has one of the biggest collections of guitar tablature that you can see on screen. And he has 105 Kiss songs tabulated on his site. And you can watch it. It plays along in real time. And you can even slow it down so you can follow along easier with it. He has all kinds of stuff. I think he goes through almost every single Kiss album he has transposed in tablature. So it shows you there, like, for a 4-string 3rd fret, you know, like this, and he shows you every little notation of it. So if you are actually interested in learning it more detail, and there's even bass tablatures. If you're into bass guitar, he has that transposed there too. Go to Dad Rock on YouTube, and you'll see. Okay, and he has lots of other bands. He has every type of Aerosmith, AC/DC, Dio, Black Sabbath. He has all kinds of tablatures. So if you're interested in picking up guitar and playing it, go there. You can pick up a lot of stuff in a short amount of time.
Great tips, Mark. I have to go and check that site out myself. I haven't seen that before.
You'd love it, Daniel.
Yeah, I'll go immediately after this episode and try to learn another Kiss song. Thank you for participating today, Mark. It was great having you, and it was real fun as usual. Hopefully we made at least one single Kiss fan play the guitar or pick up a guitar. You'll love it if you start playing guitar. It's so much fun. But that's it for today. So from me and Mark, see you next time around.
Thank you for spending time listening to the Kiss FAQ podcast today. All sales are final. There are no refunds. If you'd like, look us up on Facebook or come over to the Kiss FAQ message board and discuss the topic we've broadcast today. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Spreaker, or wherever you've listened to the show. We hope you'll join us again.